From the land to Grand Hoot University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of June 2018. It's Juneteenth, or Freedom Day. That's an American holiday that commemorates the June 19, 1865 announcement of the abolition of slavery in the U.S. state of Texas, and more generally, the emancipation of enslaved Americans throughout the former Confederacy of the Southern United States. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And along the way, we'll check in with Dave Chatterton. He'll have an update of the agricultural energies, and we'll discuss yesterday afternoon's USDA's weekly crop progress report as well, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, it's a lot better in the morning than midday was, that's for sure.
Indeed. So the settlement prices, and while they were bad enough for the soybeans down around 20 cents, do not reflect all of the trade that took place today. For instance, the trade range for nearby soybeans, old crop, from about $9 and a nickel to $8.40 on the low side. They went to actually 8.41 and a half at the bottom, and settled at that 8.89. New crop, a trading range from 9.29 on the top to 8.64 and a half, settled at $9.11. The best I think we can say is, hopefully it's a spike low. I don't know. It was a rough day after the announcement that President Trump made late yesterday afternoon as it relates to another $200 billion in potential trade tariffs against China.
Yeah, you know, the spot beans hit the lowest figure they'd hit in over 2 years, and the spot corn the lowest since August of 17. And it looks like the farmers lost somewhere around a little over $100 an acre in the past 2 weeks as far as their income potential goes. And we don't have any analog situations that mirror this double-barrel blast, both a trade war and great growing conditions and favorable June weather. So we do know that we did see the funds go from a long position today that they finally they say that tonight when they total things up, they will actually be short these markets. So we ran out of buyers this morning when they all rushed to the door to sell, and we ran out of sellers when they got down towards the bottom. So when we did see some bargain buying by a few people down there. Now, we're not sure who all of them were, but we do know that a lot of advisory firms did back out of some of their hedges down in the bottom today.
I guess I was hopeful that maybe it was a spike low, but if they're short now, it seems like that's unlikely.
Well, they went from long to short, and they sold to where they wanted to get to drive it down there, and they got tired of selling down at those low prices, so they quit. So we'll see what goes on here. There's still a lot of balls in the air. Will China come back in? We also saw where Brazil now is having trouble getting beans bought from their farmers because of the truck strike down there, and they have no idea what the freight rates are actually going to be to get it in, and that's causing the Brazilian merchandisers to not be able to offer beans for sale. At one point today, the only beans they were offering was from March 19 on forward out. No nearby shipments of beans to be sold. So that looked a little bit positive that they were out of the market for right now.
So all in all, how would you recap or summarize today's trade, especially the end of the trade where we ended up with corn just 2 1/4 lower and beans down 20 cents after a pretty wild ride?
Well, I think that basically we saw the washout today, Todd. I think that we took the week longs out. We took everybody down. It was sort of surmised here that basically what more can go wrong at this point in time? We've got an ideal crop. We've got a crop report coming. The ratings are good. We think that they'll probably up the acres a little bit in corn and beans and, of course, probably up the yield, the exports for next year. Well, with the trade wars going on, how can it get more negative than what we see today? Taking China out of the bean market is about as negative as you can get as far as any of our export business goes. So if that's all in the market here now, why, we're waiting to see some good news come along. You know, maybe some trade negotiations start up again.
Well, we'll have to wait and watch and see and wonder whether that will be the case. We'll hear more from Washington. We always do. Though it'll be a surprise when it happens, I'm sure.
And in the middle of the night, too.
Probably in the middle of the night. And you get a little alarm on your cell phone that tells you you have to go to work in the middle of the night. I can only imagine that the broker's job is really tough with the overnight trade. Anything else that we ought to discuss before I let you go for the day?
I think it's going to be very important for everybody to watch the weather. There's some very differing aspects. If you watched Agribles, weather, they have the ridge coming back in and being a little more active than some of the GFS models do. So we've got a long ways to go, and all of this corn is going to pollinate approximately the same time. And if that ridge was sitting on top of us, that could be something. And also, check your beans for Phytophthora. We've heard of a lot of guys having to replant 30, 40 acres of beans that way because Phytophthora damage is so bad in the area. And the wheat has started in Indiana. It is not yielding quite as good as last year, but with all this hot weather, why it's coming in, the moisture is down there now, but they're running about 20 bushels behind last year's yield.
Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again in a week.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, we've already talked about the $200 billion extra dollars worth of tariffs that President Donald Trump has threatened to use against China as late as yesterday afternoon, so we'll move on. Even with a growing backlash over the Trump administration's move to separate migrant children from their parents at the border, top aides to the president are planning additional restrictions on immigration before the November midterm elections. And this time, farmers may feel a little pain from that as well. These changes could include limiting the number of agricultural temporary workers and thereby worsening agriculture's labor shortage. Nancy Cook from Politico reports Trump aides hope that by September, these changes would show voters that he fulfilled his immigration promises, pleasing even those who had hoped for a border wall. The news left members of the agricultural community scratching their head, of course. Just last month, the Agriculture, Labor, State, and Homeland Security departments issued a joint release saying they were working together to revamp the H-2A Ag Guest Worker Program to address farmers' long-held concerns over requirements and restrictions. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll do some calculations on that $200 billion. The early estimates of the cost to farmers was a bit daunting based on Trump's announcements last week that he would slap 25% tariffs on about $50 billion in Chinese goods. But that was before he upped the ante last night by ordering an additional 10% tariff on $200 billion of Chinese goods. In response to Beijing's retaliation, China in turn denounced this, quote, practice of extreme pressure and blackmail, unquote, and asserted that, quote, if the U.S. side becomes irrational and issues a list, China will have to adopt comprehensive measures combining quantity and quality to make a strong countermeasure, unquote. Here's a numbers rundown from Ben Brown. He's the manager of the College of Food and Agricultural and Environmental Sciences at Ohio State. He helped publish a study in May predicting that Ohio farmers would lose 59% of their income if a 25% tariff were imposed on U.S. soybeans. Brown added in an interview Friday that he was watching to what extent China would purchase its soybeans from other countries like Brazil and Argentina. He noted that the U.S. has already benefited from the drought in Argentina, giving China one less market from which to buy soybeans. How much can Brazil fill that gap? Brown asked. Iowa State University economist Chad Hart, who's been a guest on our Commodity Week program, estimated that his state would lose $624 million in soybean sales. Hart also said that things look even worse nationwide. Soybeans are now the largest crop planted on an acreage basis in the United States. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It showed 98% of the nation's corn crop up and growing. That's on par with the rolling five-year average. 78% of the crop is in good or excellent condition, slightly better than last week. 97% of the soybeans have been sown. That's about 6 points ahead of average. And 90% of that crop is up, 9 points better than average. It is in 58% good and 15% excellent condition. That's down from last week's 60 and 14, respectively. 95% of the winter wheat crop is headed, and 27% has been harvested. That's ahead of the 19% five-year rolling average. Now here are updates from Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa.
This is Ben Torrance, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office. Above normal temperatures were felt throughout Iowa, with severe storms hampering field work and causing some localized damage last week. Statewide, there were 4.7 days suitable for field work. Activities for the week included harvesting hay, delivering grain, replanting storm-damaged fields, and applying post-emergent herbicides. While rain fell over much of the state, in south central Iowa, the percentage rated very short for both topsoil and subsoil moisture levels increased over the past week. With virtually all of the corn crop emerged, 84% was rated in good excellent condition. 97% of the soybean crop has emerged, 2 weeks ahead of average. 80% of the soybean crop was rated in good to excellent condition. 64% of the oat crop is headed, 2 days ahead of the average. 83% of the crop was rated in good to excellent condition. Hay condition improved to 73% good to excellent. Pasture conditions rated 64% good to excellent. Scorching temperatures and high humidity continue to stress livestock. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office, this is Ben Torrance.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Hot weather continued across Illinois last week, and rainfall totals varied widely. The east-southeast portion of the state averaged more than 4 inches of rain last week, but northern areas were below normal rainfall for the week. Overall, Illinois averaged 1.4 inches of rain, 4-tenths of an inch above normal. Temperatures ranged from 3 to 6 degrees above normal, and accumulated growing degrees since May 1 are well above normal across the state. There were 4.5 days suitable for fieldwork across Illinois last week, and topsoil moisture levels were rated 4% very short, 16 short, 68 adequate, and 12% surplus, a little drier than 1 week ago. Wheat harvest jumped forward to 30% complete, compared to 59% 1 year ago and 19% for the five-year average. The condition of the crop was rated as 13% very poor to poor, 29% fair, and 58% good to excellent, a little worse than 1 week ago. 93% of soybean acres have emerged, compared to 90% last year and 84% normally. 3% of acres are now blooming. The condition of the soybean crop in Illinois was rated 4% very poor to poor, 19% fair, and 77% good to excellent, down a little from last week. The condition of the corn crop in Illinois is also down slightly from 1 week ago, at 4% very poor to poor, 15% fair, and 81% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician. Despite rainfall across the state, Minnesota farmers were able to find 3.8 days suitable for field work during the week. Field activities included spraying and baling hay. 63% of the spring wheat crop is jointed or beyond. That's 2 days ahead of average. Spring wheat headed reached 6%, 4 days behind last year and 3 days behind average. Spring wheat condition improved slightly from last week's rating to reach 84% good to excellent. Oats were 98% emerged with 71% at or beyond the jointing stage. Oats were 10% headed or beyond, that's 8 days behind both last year and average. Oat condition was rated 80% good to excellent. 96% of the barley crop was emerged with 56% at or beyond the jointing stage. Barley condition rated 84% good to excellent, and that's up slightly from last week. Nearly all of Minnesota's corn has emerged. Corn condition decreased slightly to 88% good to excellent. The soybean crop was 96% emerged, that's 9 days ahead of average, and the soybean condition rated 83% good to excellent. Potato planting was reported at 98% complete, almost 2 weeks behind last year and 5 days behind average. Potato condition was rated 92% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. Dave Chatterton joins us from the Powerline Group. Good afternoon to you, Dave. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Todd, my pleasure. Thanks for having us on.
So we've got a lot to talk about today. Why don't you start with the crude oil and then make your way through the things you think of most importance?
Yeah, so some big changes since we talked last, Todd, and those mainly revolve around OPEC. And, of course, this time a month ago when we spoke, OPEC was giving every indication that they were going to continue with their current production quotas and keep those in place through the end of the year. And since then, as OPEC is as prone to do, they've changed their mind a little bit here, and they've got a meeting coming up, or their summit is on Friday and Saturday of this week, and it looks like, for all intents and purposes, that they will be increasing their production. Now, how much and exactly when and all the details yet to be worked out, we don't know for sure, but that's had a rather large effect and change in sentiment in the energy market here over the last couple of weeks. And so we've seen crude oil prices, for their part, you know, drop from the $72 per barrel range down to around $65. Gasoline has lost about 30 cents during that time period, and even heating oil or diesel fuel about 20 cents a gallon, and propane about 20 cents a gallon. So certainly, you know, we're feeling better about that. The net effect longer term of OPEC increasing production will be lowering that U.S. export demand, which is the majority of responsible for why we are sitting on low inventories, particularly in diesel fuel and in propane here, or the ag energy segments of late here. And so that will take a little bit of time. How much relief we get between now and harvest is still, you know, a little bit of a subject, but certainly we're having more of a hands-off mentality here, a hands-off approach to pricing fall needs than where we were last time we spoke.
Yeah, so how far along are you on the pricing? And of course, you're in wait-and-see mode at this point. Do you have some target timings for potential purchases in the future as well?
Yeah, I think we want to see what happens this weekend, but more generally, normally we would be building inventories this time of year. Because of those exports, we haven't been able to do that. If we could ease up on those a little bit, we may run our numbers all the way into the fall before we book. Right now, we do have some propane and some diesel fuel both on the books. I think that's a good, we're not underwater by any significant amount on those values, but we're just seeing a little bit of downside or a little bit of relief here going forward.
When you look domestically at the supply, is there much of a difference in pricing from one side of, for instance, of the Corn Belt to the other of either of those products, propane or diesel?
Not a big change. I mean, there are some regional differences, pipeline tariffs, you know, coming out of different terminals, waterborne versus, you know, land supply type of issues. But in general, we're pretty well supplied. The issues tend to be further north. And the way the pipeline and the distribution system works, Todd, is it comes out of the south and goes up to the north, you know, the production areas for crude oil, and goes up to the north. And so the further up that pipeline you get, so if you're in North Dakota or northern Minnesota, or you're in far northern Ohio versus being in southern Illinois or, you know, the middle of Iowa, you tend to have a little bit of the short end of the stick as far as outages and local basis levels. But we're not seeing a lot of that currently, although the inventory levels remain low. Diesel fuel inventories have not improved nationally since the last time we spoke. Matter of fact, they've gotten a little bit worse. We have seen the propane be able to close its gap a little bit on the inventory deficits and make a little headway here and bring some price relief with that. But certainly, I think you want to be cognizant of that. The closer we get to the fall, and of course, our corn crop right now looks a little ahead of normal, but we're certainly setting up for what could be a big corn crop and a lot of grain drying here in the fall.
We only have about 40 or 50 seconds left. Is there much of a concern at all about the Russian influence on OPEC, or if that can come to fruition at some point?
Certainly something that I think the market is concerned about and realizes that there is a strong working relationship between the two. We expect that to continue, but Russia has been the one leading the charge to put more oil on the market and actually pressuring some of the OPEC members, including Saudi Arabia and some of the lower-ranking OPEC officials, in order to get more oil onto the market. And so, if anything, they're helping from a bearish sense, price sense, or a supply sense at this point. And so we're hopeful that continues. I think that's the direction that they're going to take, but certainly they can throw a monkey wrench in things if they choose to.
Hey, thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Dave Chatterton. He is with the Powerline Group right here in Champaign. We'll talk more about the weather forecast when we come back in just 2 minutes. This is the closing market report for Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is with us. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, it's been hot and humid here. Sometimes we get a little breather, and it's usually based on what's happening in your part of the world. What are conditions like there today?
Well, it is cooler, and there's going to be more wetness and some cooler weather eventually making its way into the Midwest here over the next couple of days. Honestly, what we see unfolding is a very ideal weather pattern, sort of the right combination of off and on chances of rain, better storm activity, and temperatures that will have a bit more of an even keel to them.
Tell me about the amounts of rainfall and expectations. Is this a ring of fire event, a larger storm that will move across the whole of the Corn Belt? What kind of conditions?
Well, it's a little bit of a ring of fire combined with a trough coming out of the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies working together. And all across Nebraska, portions of the Dakotas, Kansas, eastern Colorado into Iowa, Missouri, and then Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, will be a east-west band of precipitation that over the next week or so could be anywhere from on the low end a couple of inches to as much as 4 inches of rainfall, some pockets a little bit more than that. Not all coming at once, but spread out over that 7-day period.
Sounds like ideal conditions. How about those who are making their way northward in the big wheat harvest? What will they be working through as they make their way up towards you?
Well, there was a stretch of weather in the first half of June that was quite dry or drier in those areas. So they're starting with dry ground, but at the same time, as those combines move northward, there's going to be quite a bit of shower and thunderstorm activity over Nebraska, northeastern Colorado, northwest Kansas, stretching into the Dakotas. It's one of these patterns where it's not a widespread soaking rain, muddy fields, but there will be pockets where there could be a few slowdowns.
From the Delta region all the way into the southeast, last year they had record corn and soybean yields. What are conditions there like today?
Well, not bad. They're also looking at a nearly ideal weather pattern of adequate rainfall coming, temperatures that aren't going to be quite as hot. If you were to go further west, one area that does look hotter and drier would be a large portion of Texas, maybe portions of Oklahoma. But the rest of the Delta, the rest of the Corn Belt region, looking at good conditions.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And of course, is Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up online. Listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. There you'll find the schedule of events under the link called Calendar in about a week and a half, actually. On Friday the 29th, USDA will release its updated acreage and grain stocks figures at 11 a.m. on that morning. At 8:30 a.m., I'll be in Assumption at Assumption Fest. That's just south of Decatur, a big farm event, and you're invited to come. We'll have four of our panelists with us, including Kurt Kimmel, Ellen Dearden, Kim Holzapfel, and Dan Zwicker, to take up the marketplace. That'll all happen before the USDA reports, and then, of course, we'll do the USDA reports at 11 and the closing market report in the afternoon. Find all the details online at WILLAG.org. Just look under the calendars link. I'm Todd Gleason.